Museum of Arts and Culture is exploding quite literally, almost as we speak, or certainly beginning tomorrow. And to explain that that very mystical opening is the executive director of the Museum of Arts and Culture. Good morning and welcome, Wes Jessup.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And you've had a current explosion for a while with Mount St. Helens, but talk about your new explosion about to happen.
Yeah, we have an exhibition that we're opening on Saturday to the public, which is Pompeii, Immortal City, coming to us from the National Museum of Archaeology in Naples, Italy.
And so with that, and how long will that exhibit be here?
It'll be here from this Saturday through May 3rd.
Okay, so for a couple to 3 months or so. And we have, in relation to that, a local scholar and archaeologist, Andrew Goldman. Hello, Andrew.
Hi.
And first, Wes, talk about kind of how you found Andrew or how he plays into the whole idea of bringing in such an exhibit.
Well, it's interesting because Andrew has been organizing lectures at the museum for a number of years, mm-hmm. and 10 years through the American Institute of Archaeology. Mm-hmm. And these are some of our most popular public programs. Mm-hmm. And with an emphasis in classical art, Andrew was one of the first people I spoke with when this opportunity came along. I ran the checklist by him, and he's been kind of an unofficial advisor, I would say, through this process.
Yeah, well, welcome, Andrew. And let's jump right in on Pompeii, because let's talk about first your range of specialty. You're an archaeologist within a history department. Does that involve everything from the very first rock to now, or what is your timeline expanse of your expertise?
Sure. My area of expertise is the ancient world.
Oh, and perfect.
We all have sort of chronological specialties, but mine is the Roman period, which for the Pompeii show is very exciting, as well as the Greeks and yes, even back to the very first civilizations.
Yeah, so you were pretty happy when Pompeii came along. When this exhibit came along, I imagine.
Oh, I really was. Yeah. I was very excited when Wes told me that the museum was going to bring it in. This is a big step for the museum, and it's the first show on ancient material that's been at the museum for, good quarter of a century, I think.
At least. Mm-hmm. Certainly the largest one of this material.
Okay. And so kind of get into the importance of Pompeii from for your life, for your profession, the history that we learn and everything that came out of Pompeii.
Sure. As an archaeologist, Pompeii is a very dear site to many of us because it is the longest running and first archaeological excavation. It's been going now for over 250 years, mm-hmm. and it continues even today with a lot of new and exciting finds that have been in the news over the past 6 months, a year, continuously. So it's a wonderful site. It's still producing a lot of new and very interesting results. It's one of the places where we have actually learned how to be archaeologists, where some of the very first methods and techniques took place at the site. So it is a very special site, and to be able to see objects from that site and to have them here in Spokane is a wonderful opportunity.
So over those 250 years of the excavation there, has it gone pretty well, or have there been horrible mistakes made that had to be rectified in careless excavation, or what's been the history of that excavation?
Oh, it's a very good question, I teach a class on Pompeii, and we start with this. It started as treasure hunting, and the site was refound by accident, and it proceeded to produce some beautiful wall paintings and sculptures, and as a result, the first century was really people going in with shovels and, finding whatever they wanted, occasionally recording things. But the wonderful thing about Pompeii is that after that first century, people began to get very serious about what they were doing, and they began to understand that they did have something very special. Visitors on the Grand Tour were pouring into Italy, and they wanted to come to Pompeii. And so this was a tremendous experience, and they began to realize that they had something very different here and that it needed to be treated with a lot more care. They began to record more thoroughly. They began to find new techniques in the show. For example, there's plaster casts of bodies. And they began in the late 19th century to figure out how to do these new techniques. And they began to understand that archaeology is a very careful and methodical type of scientific inquiry. And out of Pompeii then came this sort of awakening and understanding of the discipline as a whole.
Which has, I assume, then been applied in many cases and to your entire profession.
Yeah, in my own work in northern Turkey on the Black Sea, we use the kinds of techniques which were first developed at a site like Pompeii.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about careful, are archaeologists just kind of by nature careful, methodical people because they know they have to be, or because that kind of people are going to have the patience to do what needs to be done?
Oh, and you're absolutely right. It takes a tremendous amount of patience. You get excited at a young age because you think you're discovering all kinds of new finds, but what you soon realize is that the slow and methodical work actually reveals more details about the ancient world. And you don't need to dig fast. In fact, by digging more slowly, by using the latest scientific methods, you end up creating a great deal more knowledge. And that is, of course, what we're trying to do, which is to understand and reconstruct the ancient world.
And what are a few examples of the latest scientific methods? I assume all kinds of machines that can see through rocks and things like that.
We have ground-penetrating radar, LIDAR, which has become very popular, which is a way of using radar across landscapes. But in usual excavation techniques, for example, we bring along a great team of specialists. We have people who specialize in seeds and bones, in charcoal. We use testing of the wood through dendrochronology, the science of trying to understand tree rings. And we're applying a lot of interesting scientific method to what we find in terms of analysis and so forth. So it's very much a team sport, we think of archaeology in, and it has become very specialized with a lot of science involved.
And so what are some of the things that have been learned about mankind in general, and specifically Italian civilization up to AD 74, from the Pompeii excavations?
Well, one of the great things about Pompeii, although it's not actually a site frozen in time, we try to dissuade people from thinking that, the earthquake or the eruption happened and then everything was perfectly buried. In fact, the site was, destroyed, and we've excavated it since, but there are a lot of interesting aspects of Pompeii that we don't see everywhere. For example, the lower classes. People are writing things on the walls, what we call graffito. And this gives us a glimpse into the entire population, not just the upper class, which we often have a lot of information about, but the entire spectrum of the Italian population. And it helps to bring Pompeii alive because you get to see how people of all social scales and across the social stratum lived their lives in the ancient world. And many sites don't produce that kind of information. So Pompeii is exceptional in that sense.
And going along with this entire show, which is opening just tomorrow or on Saturday, I guess, is a series of lectures, and that I know that you've been on the ground floor, and then, as previously stated, you've been doing archaeological lectures at the MAC for a long time. So what are kind of some of the lectures and specialties that are going to be talked about relative to Pompeii by the lecturers?
Yeah, we have a really wonderful series of people coming to town, international and national experts on Pompeii. They're going to be talking about a really wide range of different topics. One, for example, is going to take a single street in Pompeii and examine the life of people living in the neighborhoods and in the streets. What was it like to be an average Italian at the time living in a neighborhood? We'll have other people talking about the plaster casts, which, of course, many people have seen and heard about. But how did these casts become created? And what kind of information do they give us? That will actually be taking place on Pompeii Day, April 11th. And that'll be a morning lecture. And we're really looking forward to having people come to the museum on that day. So
I assume Pompeii Day, because it was like April 11th that the eruption happened?
No, that's just the date we ended up with.
Okay.
The date of the eruption,
like Christmas.
In fact, the date of the eruption is still disputed. Mm-hmm. And our very next lecture, which will be on February 20th, as well as a lecture the following day on February 21st at Gonzaga, will actually look at that very question. When did the eruption take place? Traditionally, it's August 24th, August 25th, but the latest evidence actually shows that it probably took place in the autumn. So we'll be actually discussing all of that evidence and seeing some of the very latest finds, in fact, finds from last fall, which have just appeared.
And then one of those lectures will be you. Which one is
And I'll be talking about ancient gladiators. From Pompeii, we have some of our best evidence on ancient gladiators, which is a topic I've always loved. And this has given me a great opportunity to speak about these killing machines, for which our modern media gives us this one sort of, very bloody type of character. But we actually know that they're much more interesting and their lives are much more complicated, including those of women gladiators. We have some evidence for that as well. So I'll be speaking on April 5th, I believe, talking about gladiators as killing machines, fact and fiction.
And then in your day job, which you're about to leave to go back to, you teach at Gonzaga. Talk about how some of the things relative to this are now influencing what you're teaching this semester.
Yeah, actually, I'm teaching two classes on ancient Pompeii itself. The students are very excited to go to the show, and we'll actually have an opportunity to see the objects. Some of them have been to Pompeii, but this is exciting to be able to teach a class at a university and have access to this sort of wonderful show, which is now in our area. I also teach a class on Roman archaeology, and we're exploring the ancient Roman world, and Pompeii, of course, figures large in that as well.
Spending time with Andrew Goldman, and so we better let you go and do that very teaching that you've just described. So thank you for dropping by.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And let's continue to talk about the subject with Wes Jessup. What's your exact title?
I'm the executive
director of the Museum of Arts and Culture. And so it's, I guess, probably a lot of things. First, it's a big deal. You have to decide whether to get such a big exhibit, because I assume it's expensive, and you have to determine that you can even do this, right?
Correct. And our decision-making process for this exhibition looked a little different than others, because it was such a large-scale show. It was expensive. But there were a couple of things that moved us closer to taking it. One of them is that the 40th anniversary of Mount St. Helens eruption is 2020, mm-hmm. In May. And so we like that connection. And we also cover history. And so we did a small historic show at the museum. That's actually up right now. Mm-hmm. And we love that connection and the idea that volcanoes are universal. They don't just happen in one part of the world. They're kind of everywhere. And it was a great opportunity to kind of connect the lived experience with the historical, mm-hmm. 2,000-year-old eruption.
Yeah. So what are some of the specific events? You having a grand opening party on Saturday?
Our members' opening is Friday night, and then we do have a family day on Saturday. So we invite families to this show. We actually feel that this is one of our great family exhibitions. There's material in this show. There's audiovisual kind of experiences recreating the eruption and the kind of daily life in Pompeii, a 360-degree surround sound theatrical experience, and that sort of technology is paired with displaying around 100 objects that were taken from Pompeii. So it's a really great, I think, pairing of high tech and then really getting into daily life in this time, and also the art and the culture. I mean, there's wonderful examples of fresco painting in the show. And as my background is art history, and I just, it's wonderful to see these in person.
And that let's kind of spread out to kind of other larger aspects of the Museum of Arts and Culture. I'm spending time with Wes Jessup, the executive director. So the Pompeii exhibit opens on Saturday and runs through May, and I assume that will take over most of the space that the Rockwell exhibit was in, probably, as it moved out.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's the whole museum except for the first gallery where the Mount St. Helens exhibition is located. So,
And that is a lot of fun, the way you've involved people with to provide their own stories.
Yeah.
You must have gotten a lot of those, haven't
you? We've had so many people contribute their own stories to our oral history project around Mount St. Helens. It's been a lot of fun doing that. And important, we have an archive at the museum as well, so it's a great way to gather and collect stories that way.
Everybody who is here has their Mount St. Helens
Everybody
story.
Remembers where they were exactly. when the cloud rolled in. Yeah.
Sure do. And so it's kind of interesting. Museum of Arts and Culture, you have an interesting graphic even in your logo of MAC because you represent three very different things. You represent indigenous culture around here. You represent history and you represent fine art. And that must be a two-edged sword of opportunities, but difficulties in focus. And I want you to talk about both sides of that interesting coalition, which is the MAC.
Yeah, it is a unique combination of content areas, and we spend a lot of our time talking about balancing those areas. We have the most significant and largest collection of Plateau tribal art and artifacts, and that is really, I think, the major piece of our collection. We also have a wonderful art collection and a historical collection as well. So we build shows out of those different areas, and they're different disciplines, but they connect and they relate to each other in fascinating ways. And so we often find opportunities to connect those areas. We just finished a wonderful textile show last fall that brought together contemporary textiles with Native American textiles in our collection. I mean, we wove this whole thing together, which was really wonderful. And when we are able to do that, I think that's when we're doing our best. We also have what we feel is we're the largest museum in this region. And so we do things like Pompeii to kind of bring the world to Spokane. And those shows tend to bring a wider kind of general audience in. But it's during times like Rockwell that people discover our Native American shows and our textile shows. So I think there's great cross-pollination that happens at the MAC. And I think we've been successful in doing that in the last year and couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you essentially answered where I was kind of going. And I understand that because you probably in some ways have three distinct audiences with their own special interests, but you've already spoken of how you're really trying to bring them all together.
Right. You That's know? Exactly right. Yeah.
And then you've started, you kind of try different things, different audience engagement things over the years. There'll be a Thursday night party thing you did for a couple of years and things. Yeah. Talk about just some of these objectives to get the people in the door for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, so we look at our audience and how can we best serve them. And one of the things we did after I started was we started putting a lot of our programs on Thursday night, the third Thursday of every month, which allows people to come after work. They're not, they don't have the schedule allows them to come over. And we have different kinds of experiences. Sometimes we have concerts, lectures, hands-on activities, wine tastings, in addition to all of the open galleries. So we like to kind of pile those onto one night, which allows people to really see the variety of what we do. It's also a lot more efficient to do it that way.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And so what? How often can you mount something this big as the Pompeii exhibit?
I would say every couple, 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm. we'd want to do something like this. And we have so many community partners coming into the show, funders and people who are sponsoring it. And we've had great cooperation with some of the economic development groups in town and, Spokane County, Visit Spokane, the TPA, all of these different organizations really saw the value of bringing this exhibition. And one thing we do at the museum is we track our visitor data very closely. And we've learned with some of these bigger shows that we get a lot of attendance from outside, sometimes up to 40-45% from outside a 200-mile radius. Well, that's, there's an economic development story there when people are traveling from Tri-Cities or Missoula to come to see something. chances are they're doing other things in Spokane. So we like to tell a story that, you know, we're serving our region, we're serving our people, we're serving Spokane. But, you know, we have different opportunities to bring people in from outside, and that's a great advantage, you know, for what we do at the museum.
Mm-hmm. And then membership, because that's an important aspect, isn't it, of really cultivating regular museum members?
That's exactly right. I mean, we see that a lot of our donors now started, you know, years ago as members, and that's mm-hmm. kind of an entry into museum support. And our membership program has grown by leaps and bounds. In fact, in December, we had our largest membership month ever mm-hmm. in history. It was extraordinary. We're going into Pompeii with over 3,000 members at the museum, and we anticipate for that number to continue to grow. So we really take membership seriously. We have, we have different ways of reaching out to people, different benefits. Certainly with membership and the free admission, there's a great value proposition there when the exhibition is expensive. It's $19.50 to get in. So it's a great opportunity for people to purchase a membership and bring their family and return again if they want to come back more than once.
Now, setting a price is kind of tricky in Spokane, isn't it? Because Spokane doesn't expect the kind of prices like you might pay to get into the Art Institute of Chicago or something like
right.
that.
Right, right. So with traveling exhibitions, I think there's an understanding in the general public that, yeah, we do have to charge more because it's going to cost more mm-hmm. to bring it in. So mm-hmm. We make that pretty... I think that's people understand that, and our after the show ends, our admission goes down to $12, mm-hmm. and for the adult admission goes to $12, mm-hmm. and I think people get that, you know, especially in the museum field, we mm-hmm. always like to compare museum admission with, you know, movie prices, which mm-hmm. have gone up so much in the mm-hmm. last 10 years. And, you know, we're just right there. So,
sure. And you did pretty well off the Rockwell exhibit, didn't you?
Rockwell really surprised us. We knew it would be a popular show, but we had no idea the crowds that would be coming in. That was one of our best attended exhibitions. And it was definitely our best attended holiday season. I mean, we were just packed. We weren't, we didn't know it was going to be such a blockbuster that it was.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of power in nostalgia.
There is, but I'll tell you, I was so impressed with the number of families and children I saw at the exhibition. It was really a show that reached all different ages, and I think that's something that when we're able to do that, I think it's a great thing because we want our kids to be going to museums, and we want to make sure our children, especially in this area, have access to exhibitions like that and things like Pompeii. We want to make sure they're getting in.
And then going back to your original discipline, what about fine art? What are the challenges and opportunities for significant fine art exhibitions?
Well, we do have significant fine art exhibitions coming up regionally, regional artists, you know, local artists and national artists. In the summer, we have an American Impressionism show that I'm really excited about, and I, for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that there's a lot of local, you know, plein air painters and mm-hmm. that work in Impressionist style. So I'm looking forward to connecting this historical movement as it manifested itself in the United States with, you know, contemporary artists who still embrace that style.
And as an art historian, do you go home on the weekend and do a little painting yourself?
Well, I'm not, you know, my field, art history, and I did a lot of photography. I was less of a painter, but I love painting. I mean, mm-hmm. I've studied it mm-hmm. for a lot of years. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you already have said some of this, but upcoming exhibits, any other things that are around the corner?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about the Impressionism show, but I think the awesome show this summer is going to be a tribal canoe show. We're actually working with Upper Columbia United Tribes, UCUT, to bring in some historic canoes from our collection, but also some contemporary canoes as they relate to the ceremonial Columbia River voyage. And I'm so excited about this show because we're actually going to have a canoe being carved on our campus. And so visitors to the museum will be able to understand what that process looks like a little bit more. And I'm talking about really, really large canoes, maybe 25 feet long canoes. Mm-hmm. And so I think This is a whole area of canoes and salmon that we're exploring in this exhibition. And I think we're going to open a lot of people's eyes. I'm really excited about having that live carving happening on campus. And then in the fall, we have a really exciting pop art show coming featuring Andy Warhol, Keith Haring, Lichtenstein, all of the greats. And it's from the Jordan Schnitzer collection of prints out of Portland. So I think people will be excited to see some of that, you know, some of that pop imagery that everyone is familiar with, whether it's a Campbell soup can or a Keith Haring graffiti figure. So I'm looking forward to this year. I think it's going to be a great year.
Wes Jessup, the executive director of the MAC, the Museum of Arts and Culture. Sounds like you're on a great ride. Keep enjoying it.
Thank you so much for having me in.
Great to have you here.